Picking up in Perek Zion of Hilchot Chametz Matzah, the first year we looked at the first three halachot and saw the essential dual mitzvah that the Rambam presents of Sipur and Haggadah, and then along the way we started asking whether or not the different components are really components of each one of those mitzvot or just of Haggadah. In last session we looked at Halachat Dalet and Hey. We talked about the whole modus of Gnut Teshevach and the famous Machloket Rav and Shmuel, maybe, there's a whole lot of girsel to who it is, whether the Gnut is of Odev Oda Zara or Avadim Hayinu, and how that all works, and then the obligation of Pesach Matzamor, and we spoke about that at length. So if you look at the back page, there are really just two halachot that I'd like to look at, and with that really conclude, because next week we want to do something special on the text of the Haggadah. But Halacha Vav is a very well-known statement in the Haggadah itself. It's really the only passage in the Rambam's halachot that is almost exactly the language of the Haggadah. And all the rest of the halachot, the Rambam's been saying, you have to explain Pesach, Maror, and Matzah. By the way, he changes the order. We noticed that last week. Right? But he doesn't say, Amar Rabban Gamliel. He doesn't have the text. Here he has what's pretty much the text. B'chol dov ador chayav adam. Now, I'm going to read what's not in front of you. I'm going to read the common version of the Mishnah, which is also the common version of the Haggadah. But you'll notice some differences. B'chol dor v'dor chayav adam lirot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatsa mimitzrayim. Right? And you're familiar with that. We have songs to that. Familiar with the rhythm of that. Which literally means in every generation, or in each and every generation, I guess you'd say, b'chol dor v'dor, a person is obligated to envision himself as if he came out of Egypt. That's very simple. And then he brings a source text. And that is, again, the language of the Mishnah. Now, to remind you, the Mishnah, which is an unusual perek, the last chapter of Psachim, Perek Avri Psachim, it's unusual because, like a little bit of Masechet, actually a lot of Masechet Yoma, a little bit of Masechet Parah, like the last chapter of Bikurim, it's an eyewitness account, ki'ilu, as if like we're watching a Seder happen. Okay, now you pour the second cup, now you do this. It's more descriptive than prescriptive, although it really is prescriptive in telling you what you should do. And in the middle of that perek, Amar Rabban Gamliel, Kol mi shelo amar shlosha dvarim elu pesach lo yatzai idei chobato, and pesach matzah maror, and then we have a wild range of girsaot about whether or not there's anything more to the Mishnah, meaning pesach al shum ma, al shum, right? Or do we only have the first pasuk about Pesach? We noticed last week that the Rambam only quoted the pasuk about Pesach, not about Matzah and Maror, although in his Haggadah he has them all. So there's a wide range of things. But the next part of that Mishnah is the phrase, B'chol dor v'dor. It's in the Mishnah. Chayav Adam lirot et atzmo, and that now is not descriptive but prescriptive. This is what you must do. You must imagine yourself as if you came out, and we bring a source text, because you can't just make up an obligation, say, well, it feels good, so we'll say you're obligated. There's a pasuk. What's the pasuk? V'hotanu otzi misham. Now, where does v'hotanu otzi misham come from? It comes from a pasuk in Sefer Dvarim. So to give the context, v'chi yishachav incha machar le'mor. This is Dvarim. Moshe is talking to a generation of people who either didn't get out of Egypt, they're born in the desert, or else they were little tzitzalach when they left Egypt. And he's saying to them, when your child asks you, Ma ha'idot v'chukim v'mishpatim asher tzivah Adonai Elohechem, the one that we later identify as the Chacham in our scheme, from Atal v'mincha. And interestingly enough, we do not give the answer we have in the Haggadah, but rather, Avadim ha'inu l'faro v'mitzrayim, Yetzeinu Adonai v'misham, Yad chazakal v'shon t'yah, and then, V'otanu hotzim misham, L'man havi otanu, Latet lanu et ha'aretz hazot. Otano Otsim Yisham, which means Moshe is telling the generation that did not get out, you have to tell your kids, Hashem took us out. Which means that you're obligated to imagine as if you yourself partook. So that's where we get, that's the source, and that pasuk is quoted in all the different versions of the Mishnah. It's quoted in our Haggadah, although it's less popular because there's no songs to that part, but it's still there. And the Rambam puts that into the halacha in almost verbatim. The Rambam makes four critical changes in here. And we'll take a look at them. First, let's see the rest of the halacha. Now, where is that? Mizacharta Kevraita. That is not in the context of a child asking his father about Yitziat Mitzrayim. That is in the context of Moshe's retelling of the Aseret HaDibrot. And if you think about it for a second, the Rambam is saying something quite extraordinary and somewhat radical about Parshanut HaMikra. I'm going to step away from Haggadah for a minute to talk about what's happening here. There are, as you know, the Aseret HaDibrot are given at Har Sinai, and it's recorded in Parshat Yitro and Sefer Shemot. We're standing at the foot of the mountain, and we hear Hashem say, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and it's recorded in the Torah. Okay. The Aseret HaDibrot show up again. Where do they show up? In Dvarim. Why are they in Dvarim? Because Moshe is teaching, we've done this before a couple of years ago in the summer, Moshe is teaching the new generation about the entire episode of Mamad Har Sinai. Lo etavoteinu karat Adonai tabrit hazot ki itanu. Right? It's not just them. The brit was with us too. And that makes the brit multi-generational. And then he repeats the brit. The first thing is he repeats the Aseret HaDibrot, and if you recall, he develops each one of them. So he gives a whole long piece about Anochi Hashem Elokecha, what that means. Don't forget Hashem, remember Hashem is the one who gives you koach, etc. Then a whole long piece about Avodah Zarah. And then a whole long piece about Shem Hashem and Amakom HaShev Char Hashem. And then the expansion on Shabbat. Everything. In other words, each one of the Dibrot gets expanded out, and that takes you all the way through Kitetze. However, what about the Aseret HaDibrot themselves? There are some problems in the Aseret HaDibrot. I'm not going to focus on it. Save that for another shiur. But there are some problems in the Aseret HaDibrot because they're not exactly the same as the version in Yitro. Most famously, Shamor v'Zachor. But that's not all. You have Shamor, Yom HaShabbat, L'Kadsho, and then you have these other four words that are really problematic. Kasher Tzivcha, Adonai Elokecha. What does that mean? So, if Kasher Tzivcha is a reference to all of Aseret HaDibrot, why does it say that in the middle? Why didn't it say it at the end or at each one? So that's why Kasher Tzivcha, means because Shabbat was commanded already at the Man. Or if you want to go midrashically, even at Marat. But then you have a problem with Kabeit Tavicha V'Timecha. That wasn't commanded anywhere. So, it was commanded at Marat. But simple pshat is Kasher Tzivcha Shem Elokecha is problematic. And so the Rambam, I'm going to suggest here, is taking a very subtle leap, meaning it's a huge leap, but he's presenting it in a very discreet manner, as all the Rishonim did whenever they presented stuff that was somewhat radical. You notice in Ibn Ezra, he says the most radical stuff about post-Mosaic editions, we've done some shiurim on that, and every time he says, if you understand the secret, you get this. He won't say more than that. Say very quietly. I'll keep it quietly also, but notice he's quoting a pasuk from Dvarim. And he says, who's speaking with Zacharta ki Eved Hayita? You would think it's Hashem because it's Aseret HaDibrot. But it is Moshe because what's the rest of the pasuk? Alkein, Sifcha Adonai Elohecha l'asot t'dyom HaShabbat. If it's Hashem speaking, it should say, Alkein, Alochi Mitzavcha. Which means this is Moshe Rabbeinu's Parshanut Ki'ilu. And who's he talking to in Sefer Dvarim? Generation who were never Avadim. So he said, so why is Moshe saying, V'zacharta ki Eved Hayita? You have to remember something that actually never happened to you. You have to imagine this. If you were an Eved, and therefore you have to keep Shabbat, because Shabbat in Dvarim is associated with Yitziat Mitzrayim. Z'acharta ki Eved Hayita Mitzrayim, V'yotziach Adonai V'lecha B'sham B'yad Chazakam, Z'ot Z'yalkein, Z'ifcha Adonai V'lecha, L'sot Yom Shabbat. It's not a very well-known passage, because we're all familiar with the passage in Yitro, mainly because of Kiddush. Right? Say the words Alkain, everybody picks up a glass. But this is on equal footing. So if you say that the Zachar Takiyah and Hayita was what was originally said at Har Sinai, doesn't prove anything. Everybody there was Avadim. But the Rambam seems to be saying, well, this is Moshe Rabbeinu's addition in the 40th year to a new generation, saying, you have to imagine as if you were Avadim. And that, he says, is the source for the idea. As if you yourself were a slave, and you were taken out, and you were freed. And that becomes a huge piece of the motivation and understanding and background behind Shabbat. The beautiful Ramban explains why Shabbat is a Zecher L'Maseh B'Rishit and a Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim. Zecher L'Maseh B'Rishit is easy. Zecher L'Tziat Mitzrayim says a phenomenal thing. Shabbat is Zechel Maaseh Bereishit because Shabbat is testimony that God created the world. Shabbat is Zechel Yetziat Mitzrayim because Yetziat Mitzrayim is testimony that HaKadosh Baruch Hu continues to run the world. Not anti-deism. He didn't create and walk away. Creating continues to be involved because Yetziat Mitzrayim was God saying, I'm still here, I'm still involved, and every step of the way, and I control everything. And that's the statement of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And therefore, Shabbat is a testimony not that he once created the world, he continues to create the world, and we continue every week to have this relationship. Now, go ahead. Well, it sounds like you're asking more, what was the Seder like before the Mikdash? So I'm going to turn the question around and say, what was the Seder like before the Churban HaMikdash? The answer is we know very little. We know very little. But from the little bit of evidence we have, which is really from a passage in Philo and a little bit in Josephus, it seems that during the times of the Mikdash, Pesach was basically eating the Pesach and singing Hallel, singing Thanksgiving.
With no Sipur.
Not that there was no Sipur, but that the Haggadah, the way we know it, was...
The Sipur was on the Korban Pesach. In the midst of the Haggadah.
The question is, but what was it? The Haggadah that we have is all post-Korban, right? So what did they do? The indication was it was more of a Thanksgiving meal than a sympatic meal. You know, what we have is what's called a sympatic meal, a symposium around the meal. That seems to be post-Churban, and that seems to be all developed in that generation, because all the names of the contributors are all the generation post-Churban.
How would they have celebrated?
We have no clue.
How would they have done the Zaharka part just by having the meal?
I don't know. We don't have any evidence. Okay. Now, take a look back in Halakha Vav, and again, you'll see four critical differences in the Rambam's wording. Hold over door, the first one is Chayav Adam, not Lirot, but Leharot. This is, by the way, the most famous one, because it plays, first of all, it's the easiest one to catch, because it's a hey. Lirot, Leharot, and that show you, and it's a way of teaching some things about language, how one little letter can make a world of difference. Lirot at that mode is to envision yourself. I mean, you could sit there and meditate and pretend you're somebody that you're not, and you're Lirot at that mode. Leharot means you have to physically show it. You have to demonstrate it, which is a whole different world. So all the minhagim that are far more prevalent among Edot HaMizrach, of putting the matzah on your shoulder with a napkin and walk around the table, and all of those play-acting things are all built on that Rambam. So you're obligated to actually play it out. The beautiful minhag of the Libyan Jews, where they start the Seder, and the first thing that happens is the kid goes outside, and they close the door, and the kid knocks on the door, and they all say, where are you coming from? In the Hebrew, and he says, from Egypt. And where are you going to? To Jerusalem. And you open the door and let him in, and the Seder starts. It's all part of the same play act. You have to act it out. That's all from that hay in the Rambam, Laharot et Atzmo. I mean, there's more to it than that. The whole way that the mitzvah of the evening, the mitzvot of the evening were built, with the foods and everything else, seem to indicate that, but this is a very strong piece. So Laharot et Atzmo kilu yehu. Then there's another change. Again, the language in the Mishnah is, Lirot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatzam mitzrayim. Here he says ki'ilu hu ba'atzmo. And that goes together with the laharot. Because you know you can, and I'm not to minimize it at all, but you can have meditative moments, often Kabbalat Shabbat, especially if you're somewhere outdoors, you know, like a camp or something, you know, or in spots or something, you have a Kabbalat Shabbat. Time for great sense of kind of getting beyond your own limitations and connecting with other generations and connecting with Jews around the world. All this is all very positive. It's all, if you will, a little bit dreamy. And what is a little bit missing from it is the fact that it has no anchor, and therefore you can have the most ethereal feeling, but then when it goes away, it's gone, and there's no value left, meaning that the impact is gone. You know, it's a good memory, but the impact of it is gone. What creates a powerful impact to something is to make it physical, which seems to be what motivating the Rambam in Laharot. Don't just think it, act it out. But that acting it out will then drive home another point. It's not just my ancestors and I am, you know, child is the father to man and all of this kind of idea, which is all true, but it's all ethereal. Kilu batzmo yatza means that, you know, me, I just want to, I know people. And some of you may do this, who come to the Seder in costume. And some people come as Moshe Rabbeinu or as Eliyahu HaNavi, right? They come in costume, and part of the thing is to do the whole thing and act it out. And that's really what should be happening. The third change that he adds is the Atzah Atah. And this goes further to the issue of making it real. Because again, say kind of in a vague sense, we were all there and saw you at Sinai.com and all these very nice ideas, but they're all kind of up there in the air. I've never heard of any couple who met through that wonderful website who actually say, yeah, you were under the third rock, under over the continent. I mean, it's a nice thought. Maybe on some spiritual level it has some meaning, but as far as anything real, you know, we both live in 2015 and et cetera. But here, Kihilu Yetzah Atah means, and this isn't about something that happened in my 3,000-year-old life at some point. It's 2015, it's Laguna, it's Scottsdale, it's Beverlywood, and I just got out of Mitzrayim. Now, in a sense, that makes the conundrum even worse. Because it's one thing if, thank you, it's one thing to be sitting there kind of dreamy and take yourself from Laguna to Mamila, to the Rova, back then to Ir David, without having to actually make it real. It's a little easier. This, in a sense, is much harder because reality check. I got the paper this morning. It said 2015. I checked Dow Jones. It says 2015, right? And is it, we're living in a, and I checked the weather outside. It's Arizona. And yet, I'm somehow, right now, me, 2015, I'm in Egypt from then, and I just got out. It takes a lot more mental jujitsu.
Without the Atta, what does the mission say about?
The mission doesn't say the word. It says, Ki'ilu Yatsab Mitzrayim. And the last thing the Rambam adds in is Shi'abud. Shi'abud. Again, the language of the Mishnah is, B'chol dor ador chayav adam lirot et atzmo. And I have it here in the blue. Ki'ilu Yatsab Mitzrayim. So ki'ilu hu be'atzmo yatsa ata mishibud Mitzrayim. And that is just driving the point home much harder. It's not an emigration issue. It's a status issue. It's not that, yes, I was living in Egypt as a free citizen and I just got out of Egypt. You've got to feel the whole nine yards on your back. I was a slave up until this minute. And by the way, I've been spending the whole evening now trying to act it out and talk about it and understand and make sense of what these last 40 years of my life have been like, not having a moment to myself, not having the freedom of movement, not having the ability to make my own decisions, totally enslaved, and now, boom, I'm free. I'm free right now from all of this. Not somebody else, not my ancestor, not from somebody, and not from just the country of Egypt, but the Shibud Mitzrayim. So the Rambam is really working a pedagogic, almost miracle here. And I do not know, and I'm sure there's studies on this, whether or not he actually had a Girsa of the Mishnah that had all four of those changes in it, or was it a combination of Girsaot, or was it the Rambam's own modifying, which the Rambam was not hesitant to do, modifying the language of the Mishnah in order to achieve the pedagogic goal that he felt was critical for the evening. But it's really a remarkable thing.
It's like a parish, no? It's like a parish on the Mishnah. The Mishnah has a very terse, and then the Rishonim come and they explain what it
right.
means. So by his changing the language, it doesn't need to be a rewrite, it could just be an
expansion on it.
Expansion.
Right, exactly. And an expansion in a very subtle way,
that's
like
what the Mishnah meant.
Or maybe he's saying that is what the Mishnah meant, Chasra Mechsara, right, and adding it in. Or he might have had a Girsa, he might have a version of that, although I do not believe that's the case with all four of those changes.
Does that start at the beginning of Magid or the beginning of the Seder, this idea of being a slave and acting out the slavery?
It starts that afternoon. The Ritva is a good question.
Why do we lean to the left?
Oh, good. Excellent. Excellent question. The evening of Pesach is an evening, and this ties in with the Dayanus here. The evening of Pesach is an evening of an absolute time warp. We experience approximately infinite years of history because we go back to Terach and go forward to Mashiach, so go figure out when that is, but you know, it's a date unknown. All in one evening, which means we not only experience time and geography, right? I don't know, I don't know how it was, like, we were growing up, the Eliyahu segment of the Seder was always a Shoah segment. I don't know if other people did that. I don't know if you guys did that at home. But we would open the door, we sang the Ani Mamin from Bergen-Belsen, and we took a moment of silence for that, and then we moved on. It was always that. Then, in the 70s, that was Triple SJ, and the empty seat for the Soviet Jews, and then later on it was the empty seat for the Ethiopians. It was always like this moment of sort of geographical and temporal Jewish unity, as it were, connection to everybody. So what happens is that the Ritva, it's an interesting question, says, why are you supposed to almost fast Erev Pesach? Not fast, but you don't have a meal. You have snacks. So the Rashbam says, because when you want to eat matzah, you want to eat l'tayav. Well, let's be honest. Matzah is not the most delightful food. You want to eat it and really enjoy it, so don't eat too much. It's fine. The Ritva says a whole different thing. You come to the table like a slave. In other words, he's saying that the feeling of slavery already comes when you come to the table. You're sitting there and you're starving, and then they put all this delightful food in front of you, and you can't touch it. And then you have a glass of wine, and you can't have any of the food, and then make a big deal about having a little vegetable. And it's kind of teasing, and you could view it as being, well, this is what it's like to be in the presence of royalty and not being able to taste. But then, Aryeh asks, so why is it that we do our seva at Kiddush? Because it's all wrapped up together. And that all wrapped up together finds its perhaps most perfect expression in Hillel Shita of the Pesach. You eat Pesach Matzah Mor at one unit. You're eating the royalty and the slavery and the hard work all together. So the Rambam then goes on and says, l'fichach, and the word l'fichach is the key word in the whole Haggadah because it tells you everything we've been doing till now is all geared towards this lesson, this experience. K'shesoein adam b'layla hazet tzarich lechov l'ishtod v'humeseb derech herut. I know people who recline the whole meal. It's a mess. I wouldn't want to sit on their left. But they actually recline the whole meal. I've seen people actually lie down the whole meal. Then there's other people lie down, you know, that's the end of the meal. But, that evening you have to eat and drink like royalty. Why? Because you have to feel like, I just got out, and by the way, I just got out, and this is the whole thing's ahistorical. It's ahistorical because I just got plucked out of slavery and I'm right away a king. That doesn't happen. The historic record is, we got taken out, and then we wandered, and conquered, divided, and then finally Malchut. But we'll ignore that. We'll pass that over. Sorry for the pun. And we'll zip it straight to Malchut, right? And therefore he says, V'chol achad v'chad bein anashim bein nashim chayav lishtot b'layla za arba'a kosot shel yayin. Notice where the Rambam puts arba'a kosot shel yayin in. It's part of acting like royalty. Right? He's not connecting it with, and we talked about this a few years ago, the Vivotzeitu Itzalti, etc. He's saying that's part of Chirut. Part of Chirut is your royalty. You're having a royal feast. And this is, again, part of the fantasy life of the Seder. Here you've got a guy who's going door to door. He's begging for his parnasa. There is no way in the world any sane person can look at this guy and say this is royalty. Fallen royalty, maybe, but not royalty. He's a guy who the most royal thing he has is a green piece of paper with a few signatures on it, asking you for some more green pieces of paper. That's all he's got. And yet, he's supposed to feel like he's a king, and we have to help him feel like he's a king, and we got to make sure he's got four cups. Powerful thing. Four cups of wine for an ani who hardly has what to eat. Shir Kolkosmi and Ravid, and then he gives the Shir of the Coast. So the Rambam right here is presenting what is essentially the pedagogic, experiential, spiritual challenge of the evening. It's not an easy thing. You ask people who actually prepare it and cook it and clean for it and like that, of course it's a big challenge, but beyond all that, and not to minimize Chas V'Shalom one inch of that, but beyond all of that, the challenge of, for yourself, feeling as if I've gone through slavery, which I don't think anybody around this table has ever really experienced what that means. I've gone through slavery. We may have had difficult bosses, we may have been in uncomfortable situations, but real slavery, where there's really no out. And with seeming to be unending, because it's not as if there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And then, boom, we get taken out. And we have to act it out, and we have to have the food there, and we have to have all the symbols and all the explanation, and we have to tell Gnut the Shavach, and we have to do weird stuff so the kids will get interested so we can bring them along for the ride. And then we have to feel like we just got out, and now we're going to, which means this poor guy who maybe is living in some walk-down basement somewhere that, you know, going month to month, has to put the nicest tablecloth and four cups of wine, and he has to walk in, he has to feel like, I'm the richest, most powerful, most blessed, most favored person in the world. And I was a slave till a second ago, and Hashem just brought me out, and I'm going to celebrate. It's an amazing thing. It's a big challenge. So the question is, of course, how to address that challenge. I just want to end with perhaps advice, perhaps just suggestions, but it's a tremendous challenge that all of us face. And we face it because, first of all, we're all very reality anchored. It's hard to separate from reality. Right? One of the great brachot that we have of Shabbat and Yom Tov, of cutting out all of this reality, all the technological reality, is the ability to actually go beyond our little dalet amot. Right? This is actually a very confining thing. It connects me with the rest of the world, and it keeps me in a box. And if I disconnect from this little telephone and this little computer and everything else, I suddenly can go anywhere and anytime. I can go to the Beit HaMikdash, and I can go to... It's a famous story that probably never happened, but it's a good enough story. It's worth telling. That Napoleon, supposedly during the summer of 1813, was marching through Europe and marching through a town and heard a lot of weeping coming from a building. So he asked one of his lieutenants to go find out what was going on, and he sent him to the Jews. So he had one guy in his coterie there who understood the Jews, who knew the Jews. So he went over to find out what happened. He said, the Jews are crying because somebody destroyed their temple. Napoleon was outraged. Napoleon considered the Jews to be, he was going to protect the Jews. So who destroyed the temple? When did this happen? Who did this? The Romans, 1700 years ago. And supposedly, the very brilliant Talmid Chacham, Rabbeinu Bonaparte, said, they're still crying over their temple. This long ago, this many years afterwards, they will surely rebuild it. Well, there's a certain reality to that. The fact that you can imagine that you are Yirmiyahu sitting on the steps of the destroyed Mikdash, weeping, is probably the best guarantee you'll have of ever rebuilding it. And so the same thing happens here, that there's a very strong motivation to imagining a world that's reached perfection, because that's how we could build towards it. But how to get there, there's a challenge. And the biggest challenge really comes from the fact that we, Baruch Hashem, have big siddurim with a wide range of audience, and the trick of how to bring everybody in. It's not a simple thing. But one of the magical things that we do, and I know to some extent I'm preaching to the choir, literally, is singing. Because, you know, you can talk, and on one level it interests this one, and doesn't interest that one, and to this one already knows the story, and this one doesn't care about the story. Singing is something that has the ability to unite everybody. And to close your eyes and really go places that you can't go with words. The Chassidim like to say that you sing when words are not enough, and when singing is not enough, you get up and dance. And it's really a very powerful experience, and it's really how the Seder, this part of Magid culminates. Because you do all the talking, and all the storytelling, and all the play acting, and then the key word is Lefichach, and at Lefichach, you cover the matzahs, you pick up the wine, you start singing. And a magical thing happens there. Because up until there, you've been saying, it happened to them, us too. And within a couple prakim at the end, you say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Ga'alanu V'Galat Avoteinu. You're magically transposed to being center stage as the ones who redeemed, and say the ancestors were there also. So, Mir Tashem, we'll all put a lot of effort into it and hopefully experience a real Gu'ulah week from Friday night.